helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Point out things that are wrong, things that are not going right. I often hear people say, "What can we do?" And frequently they say, "Well, somebody's got to do something. We've got to build a better mousetrap." So I love it when I find somebody that actually does build a better mousetrap. Now I have with me Jeff Berman from Tusk Browser, and I'll be straight out. I found this very interesting for two reasons. One, he's very into freedom of speech. And that's what the Tusk Browser is about. But the other part is technology. You know, my audience knows I spent 30 years in IT, everything from developing software to working in data centers. So I just thought this was pretty cool. So Jeff, welcome to the Constitution Study. Can you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about the browser?
Paul, thank you so much for interviewing me and a little bit of your history in the IT and tech world. I too came from the tech world, but I did it sort of in a roundabout way. I was a real estate developer, fairly successful in Santa Barbara, California, and always been a kind of a conservative. But I did vote occasionally for Democrats. I will tell you that changed in the last few years when they really didn't want to work across the aisle, and we have one of the congressmen that does tend to work across the aisle. He's a Democrat, but still, it's more mouth service or mouthpiece than it is reality. So I decided with my real estate career, which did really well, that I wanted to do some tech, and we tried a few things, including most of them were always about taking care of people. So for me, with my real estate career, I'm very proud of my history as a developer because I always treated our customers as customers and not as tenants, which sounds like petty, but it's really a big thing when you look at people and you say you might be an adversary in a negotiation, but still we want to help you. And it's not break your window, I'm going to go fix it. I'm not going to worry about who pays for it. So I got into tech, and I realized after building two browsers that the browser was missing was one that, because I was using other browsers than my own, and I realized that they weren't really telling the truth about what was going on in the world. They were clouding the picture, they were censoring things, and I thought, this is not the way America should be. We should not be seeing censorship. And so I decided I take my own money. I have a few investors, but most of it is my own money. And build the world's first browser that would develop and give you much more of a free speech. It gives you the choice of changing what's the browser? Well, the browser Tusk, when you take it out of the box, so to speak, it sets up really easily. You get a news feed that's conservative. So you're not rummaging around trying to figure out, well, where's the truth? What's my truth? Or something of that nature. And then we give you easy to use links like Fox News or Breitbart or Daily Wire or something of that nature, or Bongino. And I felt that's important just for the ease of like changing your channel, easily done, and I can get the news the way I want it. But then we realized, oh, we got a bigger problem. It's the search engine.
Yeah.
People are being censored on the search engine, right? And it's terrible. I mean, on page 11 to get something that you might have an interest on Google, even DuckDuckGo, which is great for privacy, but they're to the left. There is no to the right. And that's what I decided to develop, was a search engine as well as the browser. And that's what we're in the middle of doing.
It's interesting. You use different browsers. I use different browsers. And for those of you who don't realize this, because not all my audience is technical, that browser, that piece of software you install either on your phone or on your laptop or whatever, it's talking to other systems and pulling in data. Well, part of it is it filtering content? For example, was it Chrome? Well, that tends to be very dependent on Google. Of course, Microsoft has Edge, I think they call it now. They're dependent on Microsoft. So the browser, your interface, you want one that's going to be free and open, but the search engine, you're right, is really where a lot of the filtering happens. And there's one thing I love about your search engine. By the way, as soon as I heard about it, I did download Tusk. I've got it on my phone. I've got it on my computer. I've been playing with it. It works well. I haven't had any problems or anything with it. It's odd because it uses Google Chrome extensions. So if you're like me and you've got a couple of little plugins that you really use a lot, they're there as long as they're for Chrome. But I have to admit, I looked at this Google. Well, okay, if you're telling me you're doing it. But I love the search engine because the search engine says, hey, do you want your results biased left, right, or center? You decide. And that to me is the big, that to me is a huge change in the thought process about a search engine.
And the way the search engine should be, I mean, honestly, there's no reason for us if these companies, I was just on the phone with Bing discussing the future with them and seeing how open are they to doing what we're doing. And I was shocked that the guy I had on the phone was like, I really like your idea because you're giving all sides. And to me as a free speech advocate, I'm a conservative. There's no doubt about it, but I'm also a Muskite when it comes to freedom of speech. And I believe you should be able to see all sides of the argument. Now, if you want to hear your own echo chamber, you plug into that right and you can do that. But let's say you say, hey, what's the left saying about this? You can just tap the button and you can get all the articles of what the left's saying about the same subject. You don't have to dive in. You don't have to do anything. You just tap it. And we're building that out. The next thing will happen. There'll be some news articles that will pop up for you. Then there'll be some, advertising that we're hoping. We're hoping we can make it more private. If we're working with Bing, they have like DuckDuckGo, they have a privacy policy. They can get us to be more private so we can give you, and then I'm going to build hopefully a VPN, but it will give you what you're looking for, which you can't get right now. You can't get left, right, center without a whole bunch of work on your own. And I just want this to be like you push a button and you're done. Nothing fancy.
Yeah, I'm reminded immediately of a quote from Benjamin Franklin, who said, there can be no such thing as wisdom without freedom of thought, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech, which is the ability to say what you want as long as you don't harm someone else. I'm paraphrasing a bit, but that's just it. You don't know the truth until you look at both sides. The Bible says one side seems true till you hear the other side. I forget which proverb that is. But it's this idea of, you're right, we've gotten into this echo chamber. We've gotten to this mentality of, I don't want to see anything I don't like. And not only is that, in my mind, childish, but it's also destructive of wisdom. Because if I'm not listening to the other side, if I'm not challenging what I assume to be true, I'm not looking for the truth. I'm looking to be confirmed. And again, I don't like Google. I refuse to get an Android phone. I refuse to use Google Chrome. In fact, one of the things I loved about Tusk, several places that I'm interviewed, the tools they use require a Chrome browser. Guess what? I don't have to use Chrome. I can use Tusk now and do the exact same thing, which to me is a great thing. So I'm very glad to see the technology out there. You mentioned Musk being a Muskite. Here he is, goes into Twitter, exposes a bunch of data. Here's a tool you can use. And again, on your phone, on your laptop, on your desktop, another way of getting this information so that we can be exposed to more ideas, so we can help find the truth. I personally loved it. That's why I was so excited to reach out and interview you, a little bit to get behind the scenes, but a lot just to let people know, yeah, there are other choices, and encourage my audience to give it a try. Where would they go to get a copy of the Tusk browser?
So there's a multiple places, right? First, if you're a desktop user, you would go to tuskbrowser.com and you can download it right from there. And it's good for Mac as well as PC. It does need to be updated. So you might occasionally see a little warning that says update. We're in the midst of updating the search of the browser. And then if you want Tusk on mobile, you would go to the mobile store and you would type in Tusk browser and it will pop up. It takes about 20 seconds to download. And you'll know you're on it when you start thumbing through and you see the news feed and it's conservative, and you can go in and change it. It's easy to go change. If you say, hey, no, I don't really want that. I want this. I want a medium soda. And eventually we'll build that in the news feed too, so you don't have to do anything. Because for me, automatic, easy to use, and explainable. I mean, somebody said that last night on Fox News, if you can't explain this to a 14-year-old, there's something wrong. And this is really easy. And I believe this should go into school. So one of my pushes is to hopefully to get with some of the education leaders. I love to meet with Betsy DeVos and talk about this, getting this into schools, only because I want the kids to see both sides of the argument. We're teaching a bunch of, we're getting kids to be like robotic of how they think. And it's a bad way of going in your lifetime if you can only think one way and you can't, you, and I have friends that are like that. They can't, I at least can have a conversation with people and go, well, I don't see your point, but I can see your point, you know, and go back and forth and try and learn about somebody else and how they see it. And so education to me is like top of the line. And I want to get this into schools because we've got to change the trajectory of America.
Yeah, I agree. Our government-run schools are not creating citizens. They're creating subjects, people that are dependent on government to not only tell them what to do, but how to think. And it truly says, you know, when I was a kid, we used to say, I may vehemently disagree with what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. And that is the exact opposite of what we're living with today. So, you know, all right. You mentioned you put your own money into this, but I'm guessing that's not the only thing. Can people support the work that you're doing?
Yeah, so we have a WeFunder page, and it's I think Tusk Browser WeFunder. I have to have looked that up. That it's a minimum of $100 investment, and you get a piece of the company for that. And I did this on purpose. I think we can go out and raise more money. Through large investors, large donors. But I really want to open this up to the conservative community. There's two reasons. One, my kids always said, you know, God, Dad, why didn't I get a chance to get into Tesla early on? Oh, they didn't have that opportunity. Well, I don't know if this will be super successful. So, you know, I don't want you to, you know, throw in your kitchen sink on this. But if you have an extra $100 or more, and you want to put it in. I had a judge in Indianapolis put in $10,000 last week. And he said, I said, you know, that's a little bit risky. And he said, no, I understand the risk, but I think you'll be successful with this. And we really need this. Because without the money and without making a push by our community, this will fail. And you'll be back to censorship. Because yeah. No one else is going to go. Well, I shouldn't say no one else is going to go this. But if it fails, people are less apt to trying this to work. But we really need it. We need to bring this up so there's some equality going on. And even if you just want to see what the right's saying, you got the ability to not have to go hunt to page six.
Yeah, you know, I ask people frequently, what is your liberty worth? You know, we talk a lot. We like the free things. We expect the free things, but what is your liberty worth? And you're saying, listen, if you want a browser that doesn't tell you how they think you should think, it allows you to decide which way to look at it. What is that worth to you? Sure, you can download Tusk for free and you can use it. But if you can put a little bit of money towards it, that helps keep this going. Because, yeah, I know what it costs to put this together and hiring developers and, you know, paying for code bases and stuff, license. There's a lot that's part of this. I'm so glad that you did this. Again, I've been playing with the browser. It works well. And, you know,
it's going to get better. And it's going to get better. We're working on building this out. We had a great meeting this morning. Believe it or not, and I want to be honest with you. I was really shocked at what Bing had to say, which was they liked the idea. And from a business standpoint, they said, you know, we are missing that, and we're not going to be able to produce that. We actually like other companies coming in and producing. Now, the ultimate goal, I think, on our own is to be safe and build our own search engine, and that eventually, I mean, search engine not using because all these companies. whether you're using almost any one of the other DuckDuckGo, they're all using Bing or somebody like that, Yahoo, as their base. And that's the reason why you're not seeing liberal conservative news. But in my mind, the safest thing we could build is raise enough money to build our own search engine, which is a big job, but I'm up to it. I just think that it's so important for the future, for this country, and for the world, because the world is being jaded as well. And they need to see both sides of the argument. And maybe we are more truthful than the other side is. I hate to say this, but I look at guys like Adam Schiff, who can't tell a straight. I was shocked the other day that Adam Schiff said something that made sense, because they don't seem to tell the truth. And I don't quite get that. But I want to make sure we get the truth out there.
Well, Jeff, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm very interested. Again, people go to tusbrowser.com or look for it on your mobile device. Give it a try. That it's not going to cost you anything. Give it a try. Give this man and the people working with him the opportunity to build something better. We keep saying we want something to build it. Jeff, any last words before we head off to commercial?
Yeah, Paul, great interview with me. Thank you so much. And yeah, if you go to wefunder.com, type in Tusk, and you can it's not donate. I actually want you to own a piece of this company for $100 or a little more. So please, if you have an interest in that, you really help us. And this is the time where, believe me, I will be indebted to you forever.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. Before I go, I want to remind you to check out the leading developer of supplements that work at the cellular level, HealthyCell.com. They've got a lot of great products to keep your body healthy. One is Immune Super Boost. It combines over a dozen immune supplements in one easy-to-use travel-ready gel pack. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order, whether it's Immune Super Boost or any of the products from HealthyCell.com. Just use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So again, go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you'll get 25% off your first order.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar, which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products. Toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
It was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow that said, "Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime and departing, leave behind us footprints on the sands of time." America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we're trying to find solutions. I had a great interview in the first one. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jeff Bremen. It's my kind of guy that says, here's a problem. What can I do to fix it? Not expect someone else to go fix it for him. What can I do to fix it? And he stepped up and he's created the Tusk browser. You can find it at tuskbrowser.com. And he's trying to collect money. He's trying to get investors to help him so he can develop his own search engine, not be dependent on the other search engines, which are still, you know, in the IT industry, you had an old saying, right? GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. Well, he's trying to avoid the garbage in by creating his own search engine. That's a lot of work, I can tell you. You may not think about it, but imagine the work in scanning billions and probably trillions of web pages and then coming up with a way to organize them and be able to search through them quickly and easily. It's not a small task. Took Google several years to get really, really good at it. But if you want to help, again, go to tuskbrowser.com. You can see what they're doing. You can download their browser, and you can even click the invest button and maybe kick a few dollars their way, not as a donation, but as buying a piece of the company. And I think it's really cool. But there are other people that are doing their own thing. You know, some people like Jeff's like, I see a problem, I'm going to go outside the system and find another solution. Well, other people tend to work inside the system to find a solution. Well, for example, the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, he's at it again. He's got another case that this time he's joining on to a case. He sent an amicus brief, and he wants the Supreme Court to hear a case involving the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Now, Mr. Paxton has a couple of serious concerns. One of which is basically around the fact that there's no governing of this board. The CFPB is both an unelected board, and they get their funding outside of appropriations from Congress, which, by the way, has a constitutional issue for it. But hang on to that for just a second. So the first problem we have is that he has is the CFPB is unelected. Well, there's a lot of unelected boards. I'd like to go a step farther. How about the CFPB is unconstitutional? Would you like me to prove it? I'll just use my two-minute drill. I've done this before. Let's try it with the CFPB. For those of you who haven't heard the two-minute drill, I'll give you the whole thing. It only takes 2 minutes, so here we go. The Supremacy Clause, Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution says the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and that only laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution are also considered supreme. The 10th Amendment says that a power not delegated to the United States is retained either by the states or by the people. So the first thing we have to do is look, does the CFPB enact a power delegated to the United States? And the answer is no. See, Congress has under the Commerce Clause, can regulate commerce between the states, but it's regulating commerce, not regulating everything that happens in commerce. Now, some of you may say, well, it's the General Welfare Clause, Paul, except that's the Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, says Congress can lay and collect taxes to pay the debts, provide for the common defense, and for the general welfare of the United States, capital U, capital S, proper noun, the very same proper noun used in the 10th Amendment. Now, people may look at the Necessary and Proper Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. This says Congress can make all laws necessary and proper to putting into effect the powers delegated to it or any other part of the United States. Well, since the consumer financial protection is not a power delegated to the United States, it is neither necessary nor proper for Congress to have enacted the law that created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Now, that means it is not the supreme law of the land, but I'll go a step farther. See, according to the Supreme Court in Marbury versus Madison, an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void. Therefore, since Congress didn't have the power to create the Consumer Financial Protection Board, that act is repugnant to the Constitution. That act is void. The CFPB does not legally exist. Yet I don't know how much money we've spent on it. But then we have this other problem that Mr. Paxton brings up, and that is the fact that it gains its funding outside of Congress. Now, Article 1, Section 9, Clause, I think it's 8, says no money shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law. Now, here's where things get interesting. You see, the CFPB gets its funding from the Federal Reserve, not through appropriations from Congress. So you basically have Congress telling a quasi-governmental agency that you have to give this other government agency money. Doesn't see where that is. You've effectively got Congress appropriating money for the CFPB, not from the Treasury, but from the Federal Reserve. And again, we go back to what the Constitution says, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, Congress can only lay and collect taxes to do three things: pay the debts, provide for the common defense, and the general welfare of the United States, capital U, capital S. And this is blatantly, the CFPB is unconstitutional. Now, again, Ken Paxton, he's an attorney general. He's a lawyer. So he thinks in lawsuits, and he's filed an amicus brief in support of this particular case. Now, this is a case I have been keeping my eyes on, kind of waiting to see what the court does with this. But it's at least doing something. At least it's not simply sitting back and complaining, going, oh, woe is me, they're doing terrible things, isn't this awful? Let's actually do something, even if it's within the system. Well, another example of working within the system. Now, by now you've heard that, you know, President Biden had documents that he had collected while then vice president stored in his home, in an office. We have confidential documents outside of their proper storage. Now, here's where we're seeing somebody work within the system. You see, there's a group called Protect the Public Trust, and they sent a complaint to the U.S. Office of Government Ethics. And they complained because the White House Counsel Office is being used in the investigation, the issue with Joe Biden's alleged improper handling of classified documents. See, the White House Counsel is not the president's personal law firm, but the president is using government lawyers, right? The White House Counsel's office seem to be acting as lawyers for him as a private citizen. In other words, the issue at hand here, the investigation is not President Biden in his office as president, but President Biden as a private citizen and former vice president who looks like, but at least potentially, broke the law when it came to handling secret documents. Now, in a reading from an article at the Epoch Times, it says, specifically, we believe taxpayer resources may have been inappropriately used by senior White House lawyers, including special counsel to the president, Richard Sauber, to personally benefit Joe Biden. The complaint goes on to say, we further believe that the apparent representation of Mr. Biden by the White House Counsel's office in this matter creates an untenable conflict of interest for that office. The result, intended or not, could be to reduce transparency into the mishandling of state secrets and foreclosed disclosure of communications between White House Counsel staff while acting on behalf of Joe Biden in his capacity as a citizen facing the prospect of criminal prosecution. In other words, the president, it appears, may be using public lawyers, government lawyers, to represent him in a private capacity, in effect, getting the government to pay his legal fees. Now, to me, there are other issues going on here. One is we appear to have attorneys that do not have the proper security clearances searching through classified documents or searching for classified documents. In other words, we're further breaking the classification because we have unclassified people searching these documents. How do you know? So they're finding these documents. Are they looking at them? Is anyone making sure that they are not looking at the classified data inside? Apparently not. I'm going to be talking more about that in a later episode. But again, here we have a complaint to the Government Ethics Board. Now, the other thing is we can point out certain information. We can encourage others to act with us, not for us. Well, take, for example, the recent attempts to get rid of gas cooktops, gas stoves. It started with, Robert Trumka Jr. in the federal government saying we're going to ban these. Then New York Governor Kathy Hochul got in the mix. And you know, the logic behind it is just utter stupidity. I mean, utter stupidity. You know, we've used natural gas inside of homes since the 1800s. It's not been a problem. The data that says it's a problem, interesting enough, apparently comes from a group who focuses on electric cooktops. But there's something more important. There's a more fundamental question we have here. Does the federal government have the authority to tell us what we can and cannot use inside our homes? And the thing I'm surprised is, where's the hue and cry? Where is the outcry? You know, it's interesting. I was reading an article in the Daily Caller by DeRoy Murdoch. May see if I can get him on the program. But he's been talking about this nonsense. And he asks in his article, he says, where are the gas companies? Where are their ads denouncing these idiotic, deadly policies? Yes, deadly. Anybody remember the recent snowmageddons or snow cyclones that cut power or the loss of power that the storms in California? If you've got no electricity, guess what? Natural gas still works. So these policies, yes, they will cost people their lives. He goes on to say, why are they not organizing citizens to surround left-wing city halls, Trumka's office, and Hochul's headquarters to scream bloody murder? The American Gas Association should be driving chefs to these places so they can holler, get your filthy hands off our gas ranges. The chairmen of gas stove companies should be on the air screaming two words that are not good morning. These are his words, not mine. Is it even cattle display more resistance as they are steered into slaughterhouses? Instead, executives from gas companies and gas appliance manufacturers need to grow some vocal cords, stiffen their spines, and rush to the front lines. They loudly and forcefully should rally the American people to tell each of these officious, intrusive, know-it-all despots, take your gas bans and shove it. See, what he's doing is he's calling for people, everyday people, to get involved, to say something. Yes, if you make these ranges, if you're involved in the industry, you should be right out front speaking. Why are they not doing it? Because they've been cowed. They've had their spines taken away. They've become cowards. They're afraid people will call them names. But they're also afraid that the American people won't back them. See, if they run to the front lines and shout and the American people do nothing, they're going to be attacked. But if the American people join with them and join them at the front lines and tell these idiots, no way, take your hands off our gas stove. Take this gas ban and shove it. You don't have the legal authority. Nothing you say will change that. You petty tin pot dictator, you can take your bans and shove it. I wish the American people had that much spine. If we do, we haven't demonstrated it for a long, long time. You know, if the American people actually stood up and got involved, if they pointed to the tyrants and told them to shove it, if they said, no, we're not following, we're not going to do this just because some idiot came up with some study and just tells us that this is bad for us, and in complete contradiction to the world around us, to the evidence of our own eyes, for a century, more than a century of evidence, almost two centuries at this point, well, then we are no longer free citizens. If we're going to sit down and take this because, quote unquote, experts told us so, we're not even serfs anymore. We are slaves. We will have to beg for our supper. We will have to dance for everything we want, because the government experts will tell us, regardless of what makes sense, it doesn't have to be rational, doesn't have to be logical, doesn't have to have any evidence. They've realized that if they just say this, the American people react. And all those people in the media who are covering for them, well, a pox on you as well. It's about time the American people grew up, grew a spine, and started acting like free citizens, not the serfs and subjects these tin pot dictators want us to be. The problem is, we keep waiting for someone to do something, and for the most part, that means nobody does anything. So here's my question. Who's going to answer the call? Who's going to poke the government official, the bureaucrat in the eye and say, no, we did not authorize you to do this. You don't have the legal authority to do this. No, the answer is no. You come and try to do it, we're going to defend ourselves. We're going to defend our property. Don't make it go that far. Follow the Constitution and we won't have a problem. But if you're going to come in here and start taking my life, my livelihood, my conveniences for no good reason and without any legal authority, then you are a tin pot dictators. And what's the saying that John Wilkes Booth said when he shot President Lincoln? Sink semper tyrannis. I don't want anybody to die, but I'm sure as heck not going to bend the knee or bow the neck to these tin pot dictators. Now, I'm going to ask you, if you want more information like this, if you want to hear this type of news and this type of activism and this type of help about what you can do, well, join the rest of the voices here at AmericaOutloud.com. Come here every day. Look for the news. Look for the happenings. Look for the stories. Find out all the different voices that are pointing out all these different things, and then use them not simply to energize yourself, but to energize friends and family and neighbors to let them know you don't have to sit here. You don't have to just grin and take it. You can do something about it, but it starts with standing up. And it starts with taking this information and then sharing it. Take the articles, the podcasts, the videos, all the news you can find at the website AmericaOutloud.com and share it with others. Maybe if they can see what these people are doing, maybe they'll tell people what they can do with their gasoline bans and their tyrannical treatment of the American people. It doesn't start out of Washington, D.C. It doesn't even start out of your state house. It starts right in your living room and in your backyard and in your neighborhood and in your town, and in your county. So do me a favor, take that information from AmericaOutloud.com and share it as far and as wide as you can.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan. A plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, ICSC-climate.com.
Welcome Welcome back, Everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're searching for solutions. In the first segment, I had the interview with the founder of the Tusk browser, Jeff Brimmett, talking about his solution to free speech and getting access to information. Second segment, we looked at some of the other ways that people are looking to find a solution inside the system, outside the system. What can we do? Well, there's a couple of others that stories that talk about finding solutions that I want to bring to your attention. Now, again, I've already mentioned that in California and New York are trying to ban gasoline-powered cars. The different dates, they say, no, you're not going to be able to sell a new gasoline-powered car in the state after a certain... Well, Wyoming, they've come up with their own solution. See, well, they're working on it, at least. See, a group of lawmakers in Wyoming are proposing to phase out the sale of new electric vehicles in the state by 2035. Now, why are they doing this? Well, they want to protect their oil and gas industry, and they want to preserve critical resources. In their bill, they state that gas and oil production has long been one of Wyoming's proud and valued industries. They also highlight the important role that gas-powered vehicles play in Wyoming's trade and transportation. The bill quotes, "The proliferation of electric vehicles at the expense of gas-powered vehicles will have deleterious impact on Wyoming's communities and will be detrimental to Wyoming's economy and the ability for the country to efficiently engage in commerce." Now, this, ladies and gentlemen, is called federalism. I know some people have a misunderstanding. They think federalism is more power to the federal government. No, this, ladies and gentlemen, is federalism. You have two states that say, we want all electric vehicles and no gas. Now you have one state that's trying to put in place, says, nope, we want gas vehicles and not electric. Now, here's going to be the interesting thing. Which one turns out to be the better solution? Because as the sponsor of the bill have noted, batteries used in electric vehicles contain critical minerals whose domestic supply is limited and at risk of disruption. The critical minerals used in electric batteries are not easily recyclable or disposable, meaning that municipal landfills in Wyoming and elsewhere will be required to develop practices to dispose of these minerals in a safe and responsible manner. Oh, there's problems with an all-electric solution. Now, whether this is just a political stunt meant to poke a finger in the eye of California and New York, I don't know. My guess is, no, the idea of banning electric vehicles is just as bad as banning gasoline vehicles. Why? Because they are both unconstitutional. You see, they deprive the citizens of those states of the liberty to choose the transportation machine that they want without undue influence and with zero due process. There's the ultimate rub. See, whether California does it, New York does it, Wyoming, what we're seeing is a federalist approach trying to come up, how are we going to come up with a solution? Now, if maybe Wyoming says, listen, maybe it's not that we'll ban electric vehicles. Maybe they just want to say we won't allow the banning of gasoline vehicles. Now, I've only been to Wyoming a couple of times, but the thing I've noticed about Wyoming, there's a lot and lot of land stretched out over miles. You have to go miles and miles sometimes to get between different towns, and that's really not the forte of electric vehicles. So in a place like Wyoming, you know what? Electric vehicles may not make sense. But to say we're going to ban them, to me, this smacks a bit of a political stunt, but that's okay. Let the banning of gasoline vehicles is a political stunt. There is no way either California or New York have the infrastructure to support electric vehicles. They don't. Then they can't afford to put it in place because their grids are so old. And oh, by the way, if they try to upgrade the grids, they're going to have to deal with the greenies that, you know, the naturalists that don't want these grids upgraded. They don't want to have the impact. So these bills are going to go nowhere. But at least it points out the ridiculousness of some of these bills. Now let's take a look at another example. This one actually comes from my very own current home state. That's right. Remember, I escaped the empire. I now live in the volunteer state of Tennessee. And there's a bill that has been filed in the Tennessee state that wants to establish a state bullion depository. Now, this bill is based on similar legislation that passed in Texas. And the idea is really quite simple. They want to facilitate the use of gold and silver in financial transactions within the state. Now, Senator Frank Neely introduced what is Senate Bill 150 back on January 12th, and it would establish a bullion depository that could operate either exclusively or non-exclusively as a precious metals depository to serve as custodian, guardian, and administrator of certain bullion and species that may be deposited with the depository by this state, a political subdivision, or another instrumentality of the state, or by a private individual, party, or other entity. In other words, anybody could deposit precious metals in this depository. At least that's the plan. Now, to me, this is an interesting solution to a problem. The problem we have is the Federal Reserve, when we were illegally, by the way, taken off of the gold standard, and we created the Federal Reserve as fiat currency, the dollar is no longer tied to anything real. Now, to date, if you want to do business in the United States, you had to do dollars. But what's interesting is under Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, the states cannot make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. Meaning the states said, you know, they can make gold and silver coins as a way to pay your debts. Imagine paying your state taxes with gold. Now, the details still need to be worked out. There's still a lot to do this, but it's a way to say the rate of inflation that is being driven by the federal monetary policy, by the actions of the Federal Reserve in an attempt to control things, have made things, I mean, just an absolute mess. What's interesting is I haven't checked this number in a while, but the last time I checked, which was, I think it was the late 2010, so it was like 2015, 2017, if you compared the price of the average home in the United States between 1920 and 2010, something like that, the price in dollars had skyrocketed. The price in gold had almost had changed only negligibly, meaning it's not that the houses were more expensive, it's that the dollars were worth less. So here we have a state, a second state saying, hey, we'll set up a depository. And just imagine if this depository, well, turns into something more like a bank. Imagine taking your paycheck, depositing it in the bank, having it turned to a value in gold, and then being able to write checks or use a debit card against that account in gold. I mean, I personally love the idea. I think it's a great idea, but it's a way, in this case, for a state to stick their finger in the eye of the federal bureaucracy and their destructive, what we would laughably call monetary policy, not to be confused with fiscal policy, which is also a contributing factor. Now, there's one other one I want to talk about, and this one hits a little closer to home. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Heritage Foundation is maintaining an election fraud database. It provides just a sampling of some of the election fraud cases from around the country. Now, the reason that this came to my attention is the database now includes over 1,400 proven instances, in their words, of election fraud. And think about it, 1,400 instances of proven election fraud. Now, this leads me into the personal aspect, right? So we know that election fraud, anybody who says there's no such thing as election fraud, find the Heritage Foundation database and say, no, here it is, it's fraud. And if anybody says, well, it wasn't enough to change the results, well, remind them of the story about the brownie with the dog doo-doo in it. If you don't remember that story, hey, remind me, I'll tell it to you again. But this is where it hits closer to home. See, the past weekend, I was on a conference call with a group of people. And one of the things that came about was the point of there are people who don't trust the elections anymore. They don't believe the any election, not just the individual elections where fraud has been found or fraud has been accused. Literally, there are people out there that don't trust any election. They don't think our representatives are elected anymore because of the fraud. And I've decided there's something we need to do about that. And I'm working at taking my own advice. See, the thing about elections is we seem to focus on federal elections, but each and every election starts in your county level. There's a county board of electors. Now, I've said before, that's where we need to work. That's where we need to be engaged. Well, earlier this week, I happened to run into my county mayor at an event, and I asked him. I said, hey, how would I go about getting involved with the county board of electors? And he described it a little bit, but most importantly, he gave me the name of a person who is administrator of elections in my county. And I'm trying to set up a meeting with this person. I want to talk to them and see how best can I work with the county board of electors in an attempt to make sure that my county's elections are free and fair and open. See, that's what I talk about. You have to do something. You don't have to do the big thing. You don't have to create a campaign. You don't have to create a foundation or an organization or even run. You don't have to fix Washington. You don't even have to fix your state. How about you fix your county's election? See, that's where I believe, not only where we should start, I believe it's the only solution that will make a long-term impact on our future, is if we fix the election starting at the county level. So I've reached out to this person, told her that I want to meet and see how I might be able to work with, either as part of the election commission or as in some sort of other role or advisor. What can I do to make sure that my county's elections are free, fair, and transparent? And that is my challenge to you. I don't expect you to create a new browser like Jeff is. You're not an attorney general, so I don't expect you to file cases left, right, and center. Maybe you can request ethics complaints, but maybe you're not going to do that. What you can do is you can get involved and find out a way to make sure that you're doing all that you can to make sure your county's elections are fair. Now, I have an advantage in one specific area. Well, actually, two specific areas. One is, obviously, I'm a constitutional scholar. I know the U.S. Constitution inside and out. So I can certainly advise that way. But I have another one, which has become quite important. See, as I mentioned in the first segment, I spent 30 years in IT. I've worked with computers pretty much my entire life. I mean, I've worked with computers pretty much since the personal computer existed. I have experience in computers and how they work. I can provide information that may be quite helpful in evaluating these electronic voting machines, where they're used, how they can be secured, how we can make these things happen. Now, maybe your skills are different. They probably are. But if you are interested in freedom and liberty, if you're willing to learn a bit about the Constitution and understand the importance of not only the right to vote, but for those votes to be properly counted, if we're going to live in a republic, then you can bring something to the table as well. So find whoever's in charge of your county elections and ask them, how can I be involved? How can I defend not only my right to vote, not only secure the blessings we have in voting and choosing our representatives, but how I can do that for my neighbors? Everybody in my town, everybody in my county, what can I do? And you know what? Doesn't take a huge number of people to do that. It really only takes one or two people in each county can probably make a huge difference. Now, maybe there's follow-ups or other things you need. Maybe you can reach out to other resources once this gets started. Who knows? If you do, maybe reach out to me through the website, constitutionstudy.com, And maybe we can find some way to work together with other people that are interested in these elections. But the thing is, don't sit back and do nothing. See, if everyone waits for someone to do something, then no one does anything and things don't change. We see the problems out there. We have to do something about it if we want things to, you know, as Albert Einstein said, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, is the definition of insanity. Let's stop the insanity. Let's simply move forward and say, what can I do to help here? Not in D.C., not the State House, right here in my backyard. You know, I was recently reminded of the story of Benjamin Franklin walking out of the meeting, the Constitutional Convention, was at Liberty Hall in Philadelphia. And he was met by a woman who asked him, "Mr. Franklin, what type of government have you given us?" And his response was, "A republic, if you can keep it." Well, now's the time to find out if we can keep it or not. Of all the things we participate in, of all the blessings of liberty we enjoy, the right to vote is not only essential, but it's only effective if those votes are properly counted. If your vote means nothing because it is stolen or manipulated, then the right to vote doesn't exist, and we're no longer a republic, and all the rest of our rights will tumble right after it. Now, hopefully, I've encouraged you to try something. Hopefully, I've encouraged you to at least look into doing something. I hope to encourage more. Now, you can help by letting people know that every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, they can hear the Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio network. You can listen on our apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa, or on our media player on the website. Also, these episodes go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on talk radio. Find them on your favorite podcast app, but do me a favor, subscribe, rate the show, help other people find the Constitution Study. They can find all the links at the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.com. But as I said, share them. Help me as we work together to share not only this information, not only our rights and freedoms, but the very blessings of liberty we claim to so cherish in this great country.